You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Curiosity Invited. I'm David Bryan, and today I have the great pleasure, actually greater than usual, the great pleasure of speaking to Dr. Zach Bine. Dr. Zach Bine. I like saying that.
Weird Zach, hearing that. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. So Zach is a psychologist, a teacher, a meditation instructor. We'll talk about that a bit. A group facilitator, one-on-one coach, and the founder of what is called the Adult Attachment Program. And he's got a longer bio, which I'll put in the description for those who want it. And all of that. But Zach, thank you for doing that. And one of the things that does doing this, one of the things that does not appear on Zach's bio is that we know each other because, that's interesting. We know each other from a long time ago when Zach was a student in high school that I was at. And now you're a Dr. Zach Bine, and I appreciate that. And you're specifically a doctor of psychology.
Yes.
And you started this thing, and you know, this conversation can go in all sorts of places, but let me start with this thing that you are most involved with at the moment.
Yes.
You started this thing called the Adult Attachment Program. And I think it may be that everybody knows what attachment is these days because everybody talks about it, but I'm not sure that's actually true. So first of all, what is attachment?
Mm-hmm.
What does it grow out of? And why does a person need an attachment program? Right. And anyway, thank you again for being willing to give some time here.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me. It's deeply meaningful. And you know how meaningful you are to me. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Ditto.
Attachment, it really depends on the lens that you're looking at it from. But in general, you know, humans are social beings, right? So we are a social species. We need our caregiver to take care of us, to protect us, to teach us, to model. We learn everything about life, about who we are, about whether we can get our needs met or not, about if our needs are important or not, about our value as a person and how we fit into the world. We learn all of that from our parents. And a lot earlier than one might assume.
Slow down. What do you mean by that piece? A lot earlier than
right.
What?
So the theory, attachment theory, which was really started in the 50s by this guy named John Bowlby, and then continued on through a number of different iterations. Now we have adult attachment. Because we know that the experience that you have of attachment, the quality, I should say, of attachment that you have from 0 to 2 years old has a direct effect, correlation with how you connect and disconnect with people as an adult, how you explore as an adult, whether you're comfortable to explore. When I say explore, I mean hobbies, interests, people, careers.
New situations, going into
yes.
new situations.
Yes.
Yeah.
These are all things that are directly affected by the quality of your attachment from 0 to 2 years old. So Bowlby came up with this theory that the quality of our attachment is going to have a big effect on our personality, our neuroticism, our mental health when we're older. But then Mary Ainsworth, her name was, came after Bowlby. She created a very famous study called the Strange Situation. The Strange Situation, to put somewhat simply, is you have the participant, the child, toddler, from...
These are very young kids?
Toddler, yeah.
Ah.
2 years old, three, yeah. 4, 5 years old.
Yeah.
Not up to five, I should say. I should clarify. Probably around three to four. And the situation is it's a strange room that neither mom or, I shouldn't say mom, that primary caregiver or child have never been in this room. And in this room is a set of toys. And that's essentially it. It's blank walls and a set of toys. They put mom and child in the room and they leave. And they had, you know, those two-way mirrors.
Sure.
And they observe. So first they watch the interaction between mom and child. They see what's happening. And they're measuring a couple things. What's the child doing? Is the child feeling comfortable to... Is he only playing with the toys and not worried about mom at all? Is he totally clinging to mom and not worried about the toys at all? Is there a nice balance? So first you're looking at that. And then there's a rupture. Mom leaves the room. One of the things we'll talk about is how it affects relationships as adults, and rupture is a big part of that. Rupture and repair. So the rupture in this situation is mom leaves. And then the scientist, Mary Ainsworth, observes what the child does. And the child would do a number of things. One set of children took a look, said, okay, and kept playing with the toys. It was almost as if it didn't even matter if mom was there or not. Then when mom returned, once again, kind of looks at her, okay, kind of no big deal, goes back to playing, totally only into exploration. There was another group of children who, when mom left, they protested, they got upset, not overly upset, not temper tantrum, not, you know, going, losing it, but crying, clearly upset that caregiver left the room. And then when caregiver came back to the room, they were instantly soothed. Depending on the quality of how the caregiver came back into the room. If he or she came back in the room, got on the level of the child, saw them, acknowledged that they felt, oh, it looks like you feel sad, but mommy just had to walk out for a sec, but I would never leave you permanently. I would never abandon you. And I'm back now. And, you know, really attuned, safe, soothing, encouraging. It turns out these are four of the five qualities that we know create a secure attachment in children. So that is what we want. We want, it's normal for a secure child to get upset and cry a little bit when caregiver leaves. That's a normal, secure response. And also to be able to be soothed pretty quickly when she comes back. So then there was a third group that clung to mom in the beginning. I keep saying mom, but...
Yeah, understood. Caregiver. In this particular case, it's a mom. Right.
Mom leaves. Big time problem. One example they showed, they had to stop the study because the child was so activated. And then when mom came back, unsoothable. What does all this mean? Well, it's showing us that the way that the quality of the care of the relationship, you can see the children who just played and mom just sat there and didn't engage at all were termed avoidant. In adult attachment, we call them dismissing. Same thing. The children who had a balance of play and connection with mom and then got a little bit upset but were easily soothed were termed secure. The children who were clinging to mom and then were unsoothable were termed anxious or anxious resistant, who we now call preoccupied, because they're preoccupied with connection.
These and they were formed
before the strange situation started.
Right. In other words, they walked in the room. Yep. They walked in the room, whatever they were. Cooked. This was about categorizing, you know, discerning the different styles, or styles may be the wrong word, but and
that's a fine word.
And trying to sort of give shape to them.
To
but
see.
All of that got formed in the first couple of years.
That's right.
Right.
Because you can infer that if mom was ignoring the child in the playroom, that probably from 0 to 2, there was a similar quality of attention, right?
Right, right. Well, I mean, it would just seem so. If it happens in those first couple of years, it seems like it is fundamental, right? It's somehow built into the architecture of the person, the people.
Psyche, the body. It's pre-verbal, which is why. So David Elliott just published in 21 a paper that basically criticizes traditional talk therapy. And we also know now through research that traditional talk therapy, to change the patient's attachment style, takes about 15 years.
Mm. Well, that's what that's where I was going. Was
it's really important because the model is formed before narrative verbal memory is even developed. So to talk about it, you're missing huge component. You're trying to rationalize something that's in the lizard brain that's not rational.
Okay, so can I poke at this a little bit? Not to poke holes, but so that I can understand. Oh, okay, nice. So where I was heading or what I was wondering was, so this is so fundamental. So there are successful techniques.
Yes.
That can address that. But how is it that something that is that fundamental and you don't have to go through the process. I mean, I'm not asking you to like map out what is actually done unless you need to, but how is it that it can change, that it can alter something that is so fundamental to the architecture of psyche?
Sure. So we have something called the adult attachment interview. And this, it's one of the two or maybe three empirically validated assessments of attachment in adults. And through the adult attachment interview, you get a lot of information about how mom and dad were with patient as child. So there's a number of domains: loving, neglecting, rejecting, over-involving, neglecting. They all get a score, 1 out of 9. It's quantum. Through this adult attachment interview, you can determine what style they have, because a lot
style means
attachment style.
Style is referring to those attachment categories, whatever.
Correct. So you can score as secure, you can score as preoccupied, you can score as dismissing. And what I didn't mention was the disorganized, which came a little later. Disorganized, and I should just really quickly say, Mary Main, who came after Mary Ainsworth, she saw there was a stack of videos of strange situations of kids that didn't fit any classification. And she said, there's something weird, something's there. We got to look at those videos that didn't get classified. And what she found in those videos was that children displayed bizarre behavior. And it's quite intense and moving to watch, because the child has no strategy on how to deal with mom leaving, mom coming back. You see things like they just freeze, not move at all. One child just sat, like almost catatonic. Another one crawled backwards towards mom. Bizarre behavior, disorganized behavior. And we come to find out that these children, 99.9% of the time, had internalized caregiver as perpetrator. There was abuse. Or severe neglect.
Yeah.
So imagine we're programmed, social beings, to go, when we have a need, to go as a baby, right? You can't talk, can't say. You just, and you're relying on this person to come and meet you where you are and provide the need that you, if you're longing for connection, they connect with you. If you're longing for soothing, they soothe you. Now imagine if doing that just pissed mom off, or instead whacked her. So now you've got this natural attachment system that everyone's born with that's activating, wanting to connect. But then when they do so, there's fear. A fear has been inserted into the equation. So they start to approach caregiver to get taken care of and stop, because they've learned that that's not safe.
Right.
This is making up about almost all of our mental health institution population. Almost everyone scores as disorganized on the AA, on the adult attachment interview, who are institutionalized. So
you get this profile of a person.
Yes.
But are you still heading towards the, how do you change something that's so fundamental?
Right.
And I don't mean like,
I'm getting there.
I don't mean the particular cases necessarily, but like, why does it work? if it's so fundamental.
It's David Elliott and Dan Brown.
Yeah.
Developed this program, the three pillars that heal attachment disturbances in adults. And it's too long to get into all of them.
Yeah.
Right. But the one that I will talk about is called the ideal parent figure method. And this is the third.
Oh, yeah. I read about that. I read about that in your stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the third pillar. And what we do is we have the adult attachment interview. So we know where the gaps are. We call them positive opposites. If mom was neglecting, we're going to be imagining an ideal mother figure that is so accepting, that's so present. Positive opposite, right?
Are you giving, is somebody else giving the person that picture?
So, or
are they finding it themselves?
They find it themselves. The invitation is, you can be as concrete or as imaginative as you want. And I'll give you an example of both. So I did this treatment, by the way, and that's why I have it as my career now, because after decades of talk therapy, 5 years of meditation teacher training, doing every drug you can possibly imagine, I was still engaging in the same patterns of behavior. I still saw a sick kid when I looked in the mirror. I still had imposter syndrome, even though I was getting accolades left and right, doctorate, just top of the class, all the whole thing. after I got sober when I was 22, I still felt like I still had imposter syndrome. I still sat down completely anxious to every session. 9 clients would burn me out, and I now have 32, and I feel quite resourced. So that was after a year plus of doing my own IPF, my own 3-pillar treatment, right? It transformed me. It allowed that imposter syndrome to mostly be gone. At least now it's much quieter and I have strategies for how to deal with it.
Right.
So what?
But is it always that? I mean, I know I'm interrupting, but I'll forget. Because, you know, my hair is this color.
What do you mean? Is it always that?
You just said it's much quieter.
Right.
And I have strategies for dealing with it when it does surface.
Correct.
And I'm curious, does it always somehow surface and a person needs to develop strategies for that?
Or, not always.
Or people can, is there the possibility that I don't know, for lack of a better, you're fixed. A person is fixed, whatever that means.
Well, we call it earned security. So, you know, people who test as preoccupied after their treatment, if they're testing as secure, we call that earned secure.
Got it.
The point is, the answer is yes. And part of what the IPF, ideal parent figure method, does is it is restructure the internal working model. So it's
through the power of the mind, imagination.
The power of the imagination. Dan Brown called insecure attachment a failure of the imagination. How can one imagine feeling and being protected in a relationship if they never have been? How can one imagine being emotionally soothed if they never have been? So what we do is we invite them to in the beginning, they may not look what these, they may not know what these figures look like. And I always add a little humor and I acknowledge I'm asking them to play with imaginary friends and I'm a psychologist and that is a little bit, that's a little weird, but it works. So like, just roll with me here. And usually by the first or second session, they've got a buy-in.
You just said a moment ago.
Yeah.
How can somebody imagine being soothed if they've never been soothed before?
Right.
But if they're always, if they're left with only their imagination,
uh-huh.
Right? Doesn't there need to be human beings involved, right? You started with like, we are social animals.
Exactly.
And so I can figure out, maybe with the help of of somebody like you, maybe if a person gets lucky, I can figure out a strategy that works for me, one that is not unhealthy.
Right.
You know, it's not drugs, it's not overeating, it's not whatever the hell it is. It's, you know, some trick I do with my mind. A person could figure that out. But that's not
rational.
The same as being soothed.
Correct.
Or being able to reach out for support and have another hand greet you.
Exactly.
And so how do you change that world?
So
how do you change that aspect of the formula? How does that aspect of the formula fit in with the therapy?
I totally get what you're asking. So
cool. I figured you're a smart guy. So
if you don't have the experience of being attuned to and seen and soothed, then you're not even going to know when that's happening. You're not even going to know. You're not going to even be looking for that in a partner. You're not even going to be aware of what attunement is or what it feels like to be seen or known. So what we do is it's called co-creating secure imagery. So what I will do is settle the patient in for about 5 minutes, just because we know that change is easier facilitated when you're in a calm, centered place. So for 5 minutes, I do, and there comes, that's where my meditation training comes in. I just settle them into their body, and then I invite them to go back in time and imagine that they are a young child, and to allow an image of that child to come into your mind, take your attention, put it back into the body of that child, like you're playing a first-person video game, David Bryan as a five-year-old. Only difference being, this boy, you, grew up with completely ideal parent figures, totally ideally suited to each and every one of your unique needs. And even though you may not know what they look like just yet, forming the intention of letting these figures be known by inviting them into the scene, and we would have created a scene already, you know, some ideal place, some place they feel safe.
Right.
And then you invite them to get curious. Notice what it is about these parents that when you see them, you instantly feel safe and protected. And maybe the patient can think of some things. Maybe they can say, yeah, I can see their faces are very soft and they're not threatening at all. And so they're building their relationship with their ideal parents. Sometimes they have no idea what that would look like. And then I come in and I say, okay, well, what if you were to imagine that these parents were completely non-threatening, that there was not a threatening bone in their body, and that as soon as you imagine them, you know the sun is going to rise, that you are protected now. What if you were to just imagine? And so just me and you right now.
Yeah.
I want you to imagine that I'm poking you in the solar plexus. And a little harder now. A little bit harder. How are you feeling?
I'm not good at this. I'm not good at this imagine thing.
My point is, most people would probably start to get pissed off and annoyed and feel like they're getting poked in the solar plexus. Because the mind knows no difference between an imagined experience and what's actually happening.
Right.
So
this, well, I know you're going to tell me no, but if I was being a pain in the ass, I would say this only works for people with healthy imaginations.
No.
No.
Most people come in with unhealthy imaginations.
Yeah, I would bet.
And so that's where the clinicians, you know, attunement and skills need to come in to be able to offer suggestions and trial and error. So if you imagine them coming closer, does that feel better or worse? That feels better. Oh, great. Then what? Notice how they just come closer. So you're allowing the body
to
have the felt experience of feeling safe in proximity of an attachment figure. And they may have never felt that before. And that may have been affecting how they relate to their partner in adulthood, because the same process is going to happen. They're going to, when they get close to their partner, start to feel anxious, just like they felt anxious when they got close to mom. So we allow the imagination to imagine that proximity, feeling safe and good. And if it doesn't, then they move away a little bit. And that's the attunement piece. That's the second quality of. So we work with them until they can say, I feel safe.
Right. So you said a little while ago, right? You know, the data suggests that trying to address that fundamental structure with talk therapy of one sort or another is an intense and long process, right? Yeah. In 15 years. I mean, you know,
9 months, 1 year I've seen.
That's so, and is it, it's short, but it sounds like, well, especially to me, it sounds like hard work, right?
It is.
It's not, oh, a year and then I'm magically fixed. It sounds like it would have to be pretty intense.
Within a year, if you are weekly coming and having experiences of, so part of the treatment is, so first you develop the relationship with the ideal parents.
Yeah.
And we really reinforce these five qualities: safety, attunement, emotional soothing, expressing delight in the being of the child. That was a big one for me, meaning there's nothing you have to do, there's nothing you have to look like, there's
right.
no grade you need on a test, there's no right. whatever. Just Zach
yeah.
is more than good enough for them.
Right.
And it's not, they're not subtle about it. They're constantly reminding and showing you that you're the very center for them. The most important thing, right? That's the fourth one. Fifth one is encouraging the most autonomous, independent, unique self. So they have no agenda for you. So the way yeah. I usually do this is, imagine as you're getting older, and these parents are there at every developmental milestone, knowing exactly what to do to encourage and bring out your best, most unique self.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And encourage you to, well,
explore.
To not require their presence all the time, right? I mean,
that's right.
You want them to go out in the world and like be whatever the hell they're going to be.
That's right. So part of what I'll say is notice, so I'll cultivate that sense of connection. They'll be feeling that sense of connection with their ideal parent figures.
Right.
And then I'll say, notice how even when you're not with them, say you have to go to school, say you have to go somewhere.
Yeah.
You can hold that feeling, that you can keep that feeling of connection and belonging and safety with you, even if they're not physically with you. So that's something that we work on.
And something you work on. And
the patient embodies it. The body feels it. And the body remembers. Peter Levine, somatic therapist, has a book, I believe, called The Body Remembers, or The Body Keeps the Score.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the level that we're working on. We're working on a pre-verbal level, which is where the internal working model was formed. That's why it works. And that's why talk therapy takes so goddamn long.
Mm-hmm.
Because talk therapy is addressing stuff that happens from the beginning of verbal memory, which is, you know, around 4 or 5 years old. So between 0 to 5, where the internal working model, the core beliefs, if you're a CBT person, that's where all that shit, that's where all of that stuff.
It's the internet.
That's where all that stuff is formed. But you're talking about what's happened. You're talking about stuff that's happened, so you can change your behavior, but that belief, that model about who you are and how you fit into this world in terms of connection and exploration is not changing.
Yeah. Oh, it's almost even hard to talk about what it is. It's almost like belief is too small a word. It's more like this sort of how you move through the world, how you
that's right
to that which is not you.
That's right. And so eventually what you see is, what I see is, people who were anxious in big crowds, they'll come and report to me the next week, the weirdest fucking thing happened. I was at a concert and I didn't even for 1 second wasn't hypervigilant.
Right.
That's never happened.
Yeah.
And yeah. Why is that? That's because we've been imagining situations. Part of the work is, once they develop the relationship, You talk about what's happening in their life today. So let's use this person. They say,
yeah,
I get really anxious in crowds.
Right.
And we say, okay, well then let's take a look at that with the ideal parents. And what we do is we I'll settle them in. And then we cultivate that sense of anxiety in a crowd. We actually invite it right into the present moment. Right. And we examine it. What's happening here? Notice as soon as you imagine that you're in the crowd, what changed in your body? Stomach got tighter, my throat clenched up, and we work on just softening those areas. Because a lot of what's happening when you're becoming hypervigilant is the body's reacting, and then the brain makes a story. Oh, I'm nervous because I'm in a crowd. But it's really that the body is reacting, and then we create a story, and that's one theory on emotion. But nonetheless, I would have them invite that, soften around those areas, and then be curious about what the story is that's informing or adding fuel to this trigger. I'm not safe. All these other people seem to be having fun, and I just can't. There's something wrong with me. That's the story. Okay, great, good. Now let's go back in time. And I want you to be curious about, there's a couple ways to do it. One way is to look for a memory where they had the same exact feeling.
Right.
And they didn't have the soothing and the protection that they needed.
Right.
And so they go back to the memory, childhood memory. And we bring the ideal parents in right into the memory. And they can even pause time, the imagination, let the imagination go. They can even freeze time, come in, take care of you in the exact way that you need, remind you of your value, your worth, remind you that none of these people's opinions has any bearing on that. Reminds you that you are, you know, that you're lovable, that you're wanted, that you're, and then they press play and you can go back and engage, you know, and so they can imagine that.
Yeah.
And that's an emotionally corrective experience. That's now allowing the body to learn that it can be safe in a crowd.
Right.
The body has now learned that. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes sense. It seems like it would need to be, I mean, it requires practice, right?
Yes, we record the imagery component.
Right.
So we talk, there's some talk therapy in the beginning where we're just basically talking, catching up, you know, and figuring out where we call activation, where the activations are next week. You know, something happened with the girlfriend, something happened at school, something happened at work, something.
But I'm still sort of curious about how this, well, I guess most people have relationships. That means somebody's got to take a risk. So because they're feeling more enabled in their work with a qualified therapist.
Yes.
Right. A person like you, because the person feels more enabled, they're willing to take the risk of doing this with not you.
That's right.
But actual human being.
And they now have a litmus test. They have these five qualities: safety, attunement, soothing, expressed delight, and encouragement of the best self. And I say to them, this is now the lens with which you are going to analyze and look and see and feel, because now they know what these five things feel like in the body.
Right.
They don't just know what they mean.
Right.
They know what they feel like.
Right.
So I say, I want you to watch throughout the week. And if a friend, if a classmate, a colleague reproduces that feeling in you, take a note of that and think that that might be someone you want to invest more time in.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I think that's where I was heading.
I think so too.
Was that, you know, in order for this to be meaning, well, who knows? I mean, it's just me talking. But in order,
in order for this to be
some way for you to, for a person to engage more successfully in the world, whatever that means to the person, then it's got to be something. It has to include other people, and and it would seem like you'd need some folks around you who are good.
Yep. That's exactly right.
So, okay.
And so I encourage.
We live in a world where, you know, it's harder and harder for people to meet people.
It is.
And are there more, are we living in a time where there's more unhealthy, for lack of a better way to put it, attachment?
Yes.
Or why is that? And how, and other than therapy, wise. Oh.
Sorry, let me put my phone down. What were you saying?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Got it. Yeah. 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 And
I mean, I don't mean to make a joke of your question.
But have these three, no, I know I that was a perfect answer. But are there cultural deviations in this? Is this something that's true across the board?
It's true across the board, but how one achieves it is totally individual. And a lot of that is discovered on the AAI and on the interview, and we get to see like where we really need to put the focus. There are certain things that are common to different cultures, a lot of my female clients who come from India have male dominant activations and difficulty with standing up for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so the work is imagining an ideal father who is all of those five things, which is usually the exact opposite of what the actual bio father was.
Right. Got it.
And the work ain't easy.
Right. That's the piece that I almost want to keep underlining that because sounds, hey, if you can say it, you know, and this works and then that works and that works, it's like, you know, if it's that fundamental, well, it's kind of like, you know, thinking back. I mean, we learn from it. We learned right away.
Yeah.
We can pee and shit anywhere.
Correct.
And we can't. So some, right? And we may not have a memory of it, but everybody's gone through this potty training thing.
Right.
And if you have any memory of it.
Which is totally different, which is behavioral.
Sure. But it was also traumatic.
I mean, Okay.
To try and reshape something that was like, It was work, right? Sure. It takes work for people.
That's right.
Some people than others, right?
That's
but so yeah, it's got to be that it's
so
not.
The question is, how badly do you want to suffer less?
Right. Exactly. That is exactly it. I mean, because throughout that conversation and sort of as a, you know, the sine waves that's traveling along with this conversation is people come to you because they're in distress about something, right? I mean, they're
having difficulty connecting. They can't sustain a relationship. They're having anxiety with work performance,
right?
Or just sometimes it's trauma, and it's not a specifically trauma treatment.
Right.
It's not exposure treatment. We don't like that. We think that further disorganizes people.
You mean exposure meaning
like prolonged exposure to
like snakes, so you bring a snake in the room.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
If somebody's disorganized, there's a high possibility that something like EMDR, where you're just going back eye movement desensitization reprocessing.
I see. Yeah.
Where they do this thing where you move your eyes back and forth and that
correct.
Integrate the traumatic experience. But they're not given, they're told to go to a safe place, but they haven't built
right.
the foundation right. of secure attachment that we build first mm-hmm. before we mm-hmm. go into that, if we go into that memory.
like this is something we have been talking about, something that happens at a very early age and surfaces or appears in so many different interactions with the world. Are there other things like that? Are there other things that are so core?
There's another therapy that I practice, which is called schema therapy, and it's so there's things called relational maps. There's the internal working model map, which is formed from 0 to 2. Then there's something called the core conflict relationship themes map. We call them relational maps. That's around 5 to 12. So if the patient is testing as secure, we know that 0 to 2 is okay. And then we might start to inquire about, you do this whole treatment on asking about all their relationships and looking at doing and giving them this schema questionnaire that produces, there's like 12 schemas. And the schemas are simply ways that you see yourself in the world. They're almost like internal working models, unrealistic standards of oneself. Things like that, how you see yourself in the world. And we can work with ideal parents to use that. So we'll invite that schema into the present moment and then use the ideal parents to sort of remap that schema. So that.
Yeah. So this ideal parent thing becomes a tool that gets. Yeah.
It's an amazing tool. Yeah. It's an amazing tool. I have not found anything even remotely close to as effective.
Have you ever worked with people where that's just not, they're just not able to develop that?
Yes, I have. And out of 100 or more, at least, times patients that I've done this with, I think 2 were not able to do it, or unwilling to imagine a parental figure that was safe or secure. These are obviously your more severe people. Usually there's a personality disorder. A lot of times it's just resistance. Nonetheless, I have a trick. And my trick is, okay, screw the parents. What if we were to just imagine your most secure, best self as an adult? And they go, I'm willing to try that. So now we use the same activation, the same experience.
Yeah.
She's in a memory where she's sitting in a chair by herself, alone, lonely, wondering where her caregivers are. And instead of imagining ideal parents, her ideal self.
Right. Got it.
We invite into the memory. And that usually works for the people who can't imagine parents.
Got it.
Their best self as an adult, seeing themselves as a child and taking care of them.
Got it. Yeah, that's interesting.
And that's my little trick.
That's interesting.
For those people. And that tends to work.
Well, Zach, I feel like I coaxed you to dive into the weeds right from the start. So
I'm happy to. I can talk about this. Yeah.
Well, so let me ask you one question that I sometimes ask. So, this is your territory. Now, if I had known what I was talking about, what would I have asked that I haven't asked? Like what's something that needs to be said that because I took a conversation one way or another, we didn't get there.
About attachment, about
the work you do.
Yeah. Well, I did want to say one thing that you mentioned about it being hard.
Yeah.
And this comes from my Buddhist meditation training experience. My teacher was Jack Kornfield, who is actually my ideal father figure. Because when I think of Jack, I smile. It's an impossible not to.
Yeah,
so
me too.
I
met him years ago, and but I barely know him. And every time I think of him, I smile. So
when he talks to me, I feel like I'm being read a lullaby. So you know, I use his figure, but it's Jack plus plus, right? It's Jack, you know, guided by the five qualities and the positive opposites.
Yeah.
So one of the things he talks about is the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows in life. That's just life. That there's 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. And our practice is how to hold both. At one time, a child is coming into existence, and it's a beautiful thing. And at another time, someone is dying. How do you hold both?
Mm. Yeah.
So that's part of the work that I do with people. When sadness arises, part of the work that happens in this, as we imagine safety, feeling seen and known as a little kid, feeling safe to play and explore, feeling confident to go up to strange kids and introduce yourself to them. Things that never would have occurred to me as a child because I was so scared. As you imagine those things happening and feeling them in your body, and I tell this to everyone, it's very, 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 very common that at the same time, this horrible sadness will arise.
Sure.
I call it the terrible sadness. That this is not what happened.
Right.
That this is not my life.
Right.
Essentially. That I didn't have this. This, my parents didn't do this for me. And it seems pretty easy to just take care of me. Right. At the same time, you're experiencing this elation of being really understood and soothed and spoken to in a way that you always wanted. So both things are happening. So what I tell them is, it's very important to touch the sadness. You can't ignore the sadness. That's why you're here. You've been using strategies, dismissing, preoccupied strategies to ignore the sadness. Because you don't have equanimity with the sadness. Because who wants to feel sad?
Sure.
So what I tell them is, the sadness is like the little puppy gnawing at your leg. And there's a number of ways to deal with the little puppy. You can kick the puppy, which turns out, you know, the puppy doesn't like that. And we don't really like that, turns out, either. You could ignore the puppy, and it keeps gnawing at your leg. Or you can get down to the level of the puppy, say, hi, I acknowledge you, I love you, and the puppy will just walk away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I tell them to do when the sadness arises, to feel the puppy gnawing at your leg, acknowledge it, see it, touch it, but then let these five qualities, let that elation, let that feeling of soothing and safety, let that be your abode. Let that be where you live. Touch the sadness. You acknowledge it. You do not ignore it. It exists. It's there. It sucks that you didn't have this. That's just true. But focusing on that, what's that gotten you so far?
Right. Yeah. The equanimity is important.
Oh,
The acceptance of, like, the, you know,
everything.
Acceptance of what is, right?
Yes.
Exactly.
So, that doesn't mean condoning.
No, doesn't mean, exactly.
That's right.
Doesn't mean you celebrate it, doesn't mean you elevate it, just, but you make, you don't go like this.
Right. That's right.
Right. So, hey.
Yes, sir.
Zach Byrne, Dr. Zach Byrne.
David Byrne.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure it is. So,
what a pleasure for myself.
Thank you for spending this time. I really
thank
really
you for having
appreciate
me.
It was great.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.